So honor is that glory, that splendor, that majesty. It's a feeling of dignity. It's to have great value of being for nothing you do, but just great value of being for who you are. As I said, this is a different kingdom. It's upside down to what most of us have been trained in. Not just in the world, but in church. Not in this church, but other places we go. Not in this country, but other countries we go. And we have to go to that language school of the Father's love. We have to learn the language. We have to learn the value system that will change our motivation, why we do things. So to receive glory is splendor, majesty, renown, a feeling of dignity, to have honor, great value of being, acceptability, legitimacy. Because God's view and opinion of you is reality. Right? It's not your past experience that's real. It's how He sees you is real. And that's what you're going to live under for all of eternity. So we need to get His perspective now and really change our perspective. Whoa! Because as long as you don't have His perspective, you'll be striving. How many like that? That's so much fun, striving. Pretending. Rather than resting. Jesus did everything from a place of rest because He was home. His home was not on this earth. His home was in the Father's heart. And He's taken us home to the Father's heart now so that we can live our lives from rest. Wow. That you don't have to do anything. You get to do something. And the works that He's called you to do are easy for you. Because He gives you the ability to do it. Nobody can do what you're called to do. Wow. You can't do what I do, and I can't do what you do. It's not about, you know, this cookie-cutter Christianity. Wow. It's about finding my uniqueness in Him and living that out and making that a blessing. Here's another stumbling block. You see, as human beings, we reject people who are different. We reject them based on their color, their nationality, their language. And anybody who has a different philosophy, a different idea. Why are manifestations so hard to handle? It's different. It takes me out of my comfort zone. I've never been there before. Wow. As I said, get used to leaving your comfort zone. Because down here isn't your comfort zone. I can hardly wait for those worship services in heaven. Whoa! Let's have a peek. Whoa! This is John's vision of heaven, Revelation 4. After this I looked, and there before me was a door standing open in heaven, and the voice I heard for... Whoa! The voice I had first heard speaking to me, like a trumpet, Like a trumpet. Whoa! I think Victoria was telling me she was explaining the hoe. It's like an onboard shofar. Whoa! Freedom! Wow! Whoa! Verse 2. At once, I was in the Spirit, and there before me was a throne in heaven with someone sitting on it. And the one who sat there had the appearance of jasper and carnelian, a rainbow resembling an emerald encircled the throne. Surrounding the throne were 24 other thrones, and seated on them were 24 elders. And they were dressed in white and had crowns of gold on their heads. From the throne came flashes of lightning, rumblings, and peals of thunder. Before the throne, seven lamps were blazing. These are the seven spirits of God. Also before the throne, there was what looked like a sea of glass, clear as crystal. In the center around the throne were four living creatures, and they were covered with eyes. In front and in back, the first living creature was like a lion. The second was like an ox. The third had the face like a man. Whew. The fourth was like a flying eagle. Each of the four living creatures had six wings and was covered with eyes all around, even under his wings. Day and night, they never stopped saying, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty, who was and is to come." Whenever the living creatures give glory, honor, and thanks to Him who sits on the throne and who lives forever and ever, the 24 elders fall down before Him who sits on the throne and worship Him who lives forever and ever. And they lay their crowns before the throne and say, "You are worthy, our Lord and God, to receive glory and honor and power, for You created all things, and by Your will they were created and have their being." Wow. Just read Revelation. This is reality. This is what's going on right now and has been going on for eternity. And we're in this little blip. And we need to have orientation now. Not have to go to the orientation meeting in heaven. Wow. To honor means to make glorious, to validate, to prize, to treasure, to esteem highly. To have dignity means to have a quality or state of being worthy. You've been made worthy through the blood of the Lamb. You've been honored, highly esteemed. It is to have high rank, office, or position. It is to have legal title of nobility or honor. I remember one time, this was a few years ago, when, you know, the children especially were seeing angelic activity in the meetings. And I was preaching one night in Toronto, and this elderly lady came up to me at the end of the meeting, and she says, "The whole time you were preaching, I saw this angel, this huge angel standing beside you with a flaming sword in his hand." Well, I had God bumps everywhere. And, you know, I'd already learned by that time, this is like, you know, 6 or 7 years into the move of the Spirit, I'd already learned that if you're skeptical, you miss out completely. And that God is after your skepticism. He will confound your mind to reveal your heart. It is the foolishness of God that is wiser than man's wisdom. Hello. And so when we stumble over manifestations or things that happen that we've never seen or done before, that's not the way we do it in our church. Oh well. You know, if revival tarries and we see more and more moves of the Spirit, you know what has happened historically with revivals? Just over the last 100 years. Whoever experiences one move of God persecutes the next move. Because we've got it. The hardest group of people to enter into this move of the Spirit have been the charismatics. You know who comes mostly? Conservatives, Baptists, Anglicans, people that, you know, experienced a move of the Spirit 80, 90 years ago. Because there can come a spiritual pride. And as I said, pride is our enemy, not the devil. Or more than the devil. That pride. Because God used me, now I'm special. No, I'm special before He used me. He doesn't have to use me to show me my value. I have value already, the same value as Jesus. Whoa! When you go to heaven, everything you've done for love instead of from love remains on this side of heaven. Everything from the wrong motivation. Wow. Is just wood, hay, and stubble. And will be consumed. So when he says, when Jesus said, all the law and the prophets hang on two things, we better pay attention to those two things. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Oh, and in fine print, by the way, you can't do it. You can't do it unless you receive it. Hey! And then love your neighbor as yourself. Do you love yourself? Most Christians don't. Wow, they have deep-rooted self-hatred, self-rejection. Because they evaluate themselves on what they do or don't do. Not on what Jesus did. Hey, hey, hey! Where was I? That water? It's like milk. Whoosh! Wow. So to receive the glory that the Father's given to Jesus, that's where his ministry started. Before he did the first miracle, turning the water into wine, he received glory and honor from the Father. And it thundered from heaven. I thought of all the things that God could have spoken over Jesus to start that revival. He said, this is my Son, whom I love, and with him I'm well pleased. And that needs to get right into the center of our being. Thank you. Wow. That needs to get written on our hearts. And every ungodly belief that I have, every value system that I have that comes from the pride of works, has to go to the cross. Who's going to do this? Who's going to do the work? Who's going to do the work? Christ in you. As you choose to believe, you will come to believe by grace through faith alone. Wow. I was teaching at a YWAM school years ago. And I come up to the coffee machine in the morning. And I got in late that night, so about 8:30 I'm down at the cafe getting a coffee, and there's this girl standing there. This is a YWAM base that had about 5 or 6 different schools going on. And I was teaching in the discipleship training school. But there were schools of creative ministry, there were schools of drama, all these different things. And this girl that I met at the coffee maker, I mean, first thing in the morning, 8:30, I've hardly got my eyes open. And she's standing there, she has an Iroquois haircut, purple hair, sort of purple-violet hair with a white stripe down the center, and then lime green and orange, fluorescent orange, striped outfit on. I'm like, I'm looking for the off switch. Oh my gosh. And, you know, she introduces herself to me and she says, "Oh, are you here visiting? Are you? I says, "No, actually I'm here teaching." She says, "Oh, which school are you teaching in?" I said, "Oh, I'm teaching in the discipleship training school." And she said, "You're not Peter Jackson teaching on the Father Heart of God." I said, "Yeah." I could feel the wall coming up. Well, thank you very much. And, wow. So, we go our separate ways, but we end up in the class together. And she's sitting right on the front row, right about where you are, Rory. And the whole time, she's made a decision. She's not going to let anything in that I say. She's just looking straight ahead. She has to be at the class. But she's determined she's not going to receive anything. And, you know, this is where man looks at the outward, God looks at the heart. And in this, there was a group there of about 55 students. Out of that group, about 10 of them were sort of the same kind of heart as her, stony heart towards fatherhood. But when I found out about this girl, because I asked the leader of the group, I said, "You know that girl that's sitting on the front row with the Yeah, that one." I said, "Is she always like this?" He says, "No, I can't understand what's going on. She's like this incredible evangelist, so outgoing and friendly, and you know, she's only been a Christian a year, and she got saved through YWAM's ministry in Amsterdam to all the punkers and prostitutes down there at this place called the Ark. And, you know, she's come to really first go through this discipleship training school and then take the school of drama." And I said, "Well, I can't understand it. Do you know anything about her father?" He said, "Oh, don't even go there, man. Not only her father, but her grandfather." And we come to find out that this girl had been raped by her father and her grandfather. And as a matter of fact, her grandfather had just died 6 months before she'd come to the school. She tried to lead him to the Lord on his deathbed, and he cursed God and he cursed her with his dying breath. So that pain and all that was compartmentalized was manifesting as soon as I come in the scene. And I just felt the Lord say to me, "If you didn't come here for anybody else, you came here for her." He said, "You look at the outward, I look at the heart. Don't judge the book by the cover." And so I just was patient. But all through that week, up until Thursday night, she sat there, arms folded. Trying not to hear anything. That was pretty hard. And she wasn't successful. And on Thursday night, I had taught through the whole week, with there had been no ministry whatsoever. And sometimes it goes like that. Just builds, 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 and then the dam breaks. Other times it's bit by bit. But this particular week, I taught Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all day Thursday, and on Thursday night, we were going to have this ministry time. We had all the team leaders there to help pray. And again, she sat there through the whole thing, stone-faced. But two of her closest friends, one whose father, the day she was born, wanted a boy and she was a girl. So apparently her father had said to her mother, "You can have this one, I wanted a boy." And she had tried to be the little boy that her father wanted all her life. And to be honest, when I first met her, I thought she was a guy. It's not only she was dressed masculine, she had a masculine spirit. And she had been a tomboy all her life and just tried to be the boy that her father wanted, but never got that acceptance. That girl got, oh man, I'm telling you, she was like in a fetal position for about 2 or 3 hours, this pain, this grief. She didn't consciously hear those words from her father, but I'm telling you, that spirit of rejection went right into her, right after she was born. The most powerful need you and I have is to be loved by our parents, by God the Father. And when that need is not met, wow, we do a lot of things to try to get it met. Always trying to fill that deficit. Anyway, this was one of her close friends in the school. She gets set free. Another guy who was a male prostitute, his father kicked him out of the house when he was 12 years old to teach him to be a man. So he lived on the streets from 12. And the only way he could survive was, you know, male prostitution, and then became a drug pusher. And two of her friends got just absolutely set free in an amazing way. And the next morning, we're sitting in class, Friday morning, this is the last day. And I just gave opportunity, because I, you know, a lot of the stuff God was just doing sovereignly. So I didn't get to see or hear what everything was going on. And she, both the girl and the guy that got set free, start to testify first about, I mean, they're just excited. They're just, you know, this is incredible. I'm free. And as the first girl shares, the one who had the masculine spirit, I'm telling you, when she walked into class, you didn't have to ask her what happened. Wow. Unbelievable. It's like that rose that was in bud form bloomed. And a rose is pretty ugly when it's like this. But the fragrance and the beauty of a rose when it's opened up. She comes into the class and the guys are like, "Whoa, what happened to you?" Hot tamale. So, you know, she's telling what's happened to her and what God showed her, you know, how he was there, and she saw this vision of the Father standing between her and her earthly father and receiving her as his daughter. Amazing. So that set her free. And then the other guy, you know, he starts sharing. In the middle of his sharing time, this girl who was sitting on the front row with the punk hairdo, you know, out the door. She explodes with anger. And almost broke the door off the hinges when she went out. And took off for the whole day. And everybody's, you know, really concerned because of her background and stuff. And so we got together with the staff right after this was over and just prayed for the afternoon that the Father, and I told them what God had spoken to me about her at the beginning of the week. So we just prayed and asked the Father, you know, just to meet her in a powerful way, which he did. And she was already, she'd bought a bus ticket. She was going to, she didn't even care where she was going. She was at the bus station just fuming with anger, and the father just spoke to her. And he just said to her, "You are my precious daughter. You are my princess." I told that story about my daughter Shannon when she was first born, and I looked at her in the eyes, and not even a Christian, it just came right out of my heart. "You're my little princess." And she, you know, when I'd said that, she was trying to block that out, of course, but that one got in. You know, it was like a rhema from the Father. "You're my little princess." It haunted her until she received it. And she came back the next morning about 8 o'clock and knocked on my door with her small group leader and just said, "I know you're leaving soon, but please, can we pray through this whole thing?" And she told me what happened. And oh my gosh. I know what Jesus must have felt like when he ministered to Mary Magdalene. Incredible. You just think you've heard the worst possible scenario, and then you hear it worse. And the Father's love for her. And you know, she's written me letters since then. And she's not only leading people to Jesus, but leading them to the Father. And experiencing that wholeness that comes from being there. When we haven't received that honor, we have appearance management. We hide the reality of life from others. It causes one to cloak and hide those things that are not perfect. If a Christian is supposed to be holy, then the shame-based Christian cloaks and hides everything that is not holy. Shame causes an intense focus on self, trying to look right, talk right, and do right, taking the focus off the Lord. By the way, that's the key to holiness. Focus on Him, not on you. And so every day we just find ourselves either running to Him or running from Him. Remember what I said the other day? It only took, you know, it took 40 years. I should say it took one day to get Israel out of Egypt, but 40 years to get Egypt out of Israel. And some of them didn't get it out and stayed in the wilderness. And that's the same with us. We've been raised in a shame-based society. This nation is so shame-based, it's incredible. If you go, psychologists have called Asia a shame-based nation. And I could read you some stories that just blow your mind. I mean, you have to take an entrance exam for nursery school. Sign up your 3-year-old. Take this exam. See how bright you are. Wow. And that's where it goes, perfectionism. If you're shame-based, I try to be perfect. But when I can't be perfect, I give up. So I just lawless. But then I know I shouldn't do that, so I try more. And then I give up again because I can never reach the mark. Nobody can be perfect. Only Jesus. And you exchange places with Him. You take His righteousness instead of trying to get your own. Well, let's take a break, shall we?